over now. The dawn is drawing very nigh. Let's creep away from the day and allow me to say goodbye.
This is Natalie, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Do you like art, Natalie? Yeah,
yes.
Do you love art?
Yeah!
Wednesday, everybody. Hello, this is Maria Vasquez-Boyd, and you're listening. You're tuned into 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Art Speak Radio, and we're live every Wednesday, noon to 1, here from the KKFI studios at 39th and Main. So thank you so much for making us a part of your afternoon and listening to us online at kkfi.org. Yay! So first of all, I do want to say, take care in this heat, folks. Keep your little animals watered, hydrated. Keep them in if you can. And do check on your neighbors, because it's important that we look after one another. Now, in light of all that, today we have in the studio, we have a group of really wonderful artists. Nick Ward-Bopp is here. Also, Bernadette Esperanza Torres, Israel Alejandro Garcia, and Sandy Van Tool. They're all here in the studio to share with you what's going on in their world and enlighten you. Right, Nick?
That's right.
So this is Nick Ward-Bopp. We're going to talk about the Maker Village, which is a community of wood and metal and a workshop in a century-old building at 31st and Cherry. So welcome, friend.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's been a while, but we love having you in the studio to talk about what's happening at Maker Village, because there's so much going on, and people need to be aware that that's the place to go to make things, right?
It is a place to go to make things. there are some great resources in the city.
Sure.
And there could be, honestly, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, there could be 10 or 15 Maker Villages,
yeah.
You know, all having their own specific disciplines and offerings for people. So there's more room for more places like Maker Village.
Well, and I think it's really exciting, too, because you have an idea, you may not have access to tools or supplies and that sort of thing, and that's where you come in, right?
That's right. That's right. So we've got, you know, roughly 2,000-3,000 square feet, depending on how you look at it, of wood and metalworking equipment. We've got a lot of classes for beginners. We have open shop, which is Saturdays. You don't have to have a membership for that. So that's kind of how we're different than most of the spaces in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a membership to work on that project or get some training or use the bandsaw, you know, whatever you need on a Saturday open shop.
And Nick, I'm going to switch you to this microphone. I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Ah, darn. Maybe it's my microphone. Let me go back to the second one.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there you are. And that's it's community radio, folks. So Maker Village is located at 606 East 31st Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And that's really just right there off of, what, 31st and Cherry?
Yep, you got it. Right there in the corner.
Yeah. So what events are happening or taking place or soon to happen, Nick?
Yeah, we got some cool stuff coming up. One thing that is later in August that we're excited about is a new class. We're partnering with Rightfully Sown.
That's a good organization.
Oh, super cool organization. Yeah. So you actually learn how to make a bag. So sew up your own bag at Rightfully Sown. And then you get to make wooden purse handles at Maker Village. So it's a two-part class, August 24th and 31st, and it's really fun because you get to, you know, dive in and really learn that textile construction piece, which I'm actually taking that part. I'm really excited about taking it.
Yeah.
And then at Maker Village, we show you how to, you know, use the router, use the bandsaw, some of the common tools that you need to actually make wooden hoop handles for the purse.
I like
or
that.
Or the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that there's a renaissance in people wanting to learn how to make things rather than, you know, just always go out and buy something and make, you know, is there a renaissance in wanting to do and make original works of art or furniture or whatever?
I think so. I mean, you can call it the maker movement, the handmade movement. We've just gone a couple generations of losing some of that knowledge, losing those factories, losing those artisans, those trades, those skills. And you're really seeing a resurgence, artists and people that maybe not identifying themselves as artists that are just making stuff and learning from other people on YouTube or Instagram or however and sharing that knowledge. So it's really cool, having spaces to do it locally, but also just a platform online to share and learn.
So what are some of the tools that people can work with at Maker Village? Because, you may not have a lathe or a bandsaw hanging around your house. What are some other tools and that people can come down?
Sure. We've got a wide format planer, table saw, router, bandsaw, a lot of the traditional woodworking tools. We've also got metalworking. So we've got, MIG welders, plasma cutter, a lot of the, big table you need to set up.
3D printers?
We don't have much in the way of digital fabrication.
Okay.
Hammer Space, the Johnson County Library Makerspace, a few of the other spaces in town kind of have that covered. So we go for just more traditional kind of sawdust and sparks, woodworking and metalworking,
Ooh, that's a great title.
Yeah.
and I do want to mention that in the write-up that you'll have, if you can't afford a class or event that you're interested, you might be able to trade some sweat equity. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, we got a few people at the shop helping out right now on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of things that may not be directly related to wood and metalworking, but it's more like building maintenance, neighborhood cleanup stuff.
Yeah.
So there's, the shop is always dirty, so we always need help cleaning up. And that sweat equity, if you come and pitch in, you get free shop time or free classes. That's kind of how I learned is that sweat equity from somebody else taking a chance and letting me build those skills, and then I was able to learn because I couldn't afford it. So try to give that opportunity to others.
And I think there's a sense of ownership. There's a sense of, I belong here. This is my space too. When you have that sort of sweat equity, in exchange for services or whatever classes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you get to see how the sausage is made. You get to see the stuff that is kind of duties assigned when having a small business. All the little stuff you have to do that may not be super, exciting, but you got to do it.
Glamorous, kind of like a radio station.
Right.
It's not just all air glamour.
Yeah.
Located at, 606 East 31st Street. What are the hours and contact information for people to find out more information or if they want to sign up for a class or just kind of meet up? Maybe a tour of the facility?
Sure. Saturdays are usually best. We're open generally 9 to 5 on Saturdays. And you can email us at nick@makervillagekc.org.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have classes all throughout the week and on Saturdays as well. And a few classes that we have coming up in the fall, that I didn't mention, a couple new classes. We have a three-legged wood stool class. So a lot of our classes now are more beginner classes that mm-hmm. work on machines. Mm-hmm. This is a more kind of intermediate course where you're doing more handwork. So you're mm-hmm. learning how to use a spoke shave, learning how to use a hand plane, and you're shaping that piece of furniture by hand. So it's really fun. And then another class, metal side table. So you're making a wooden top, and you're getting to weld up a frame for it. So kind of making it be like an intro to furniture almost.
You know, and that's really exciting for people who have never done any welding. And, you know, this is their first opportunity to really kind of do some, and then actually take away a piece of furniture.
Yeah, and MIG welding especially is really easy. It's fun. It's really instantly gratifying because if you can draw, if you can write on with pen and paper, you can MIG weld. It's really, really easy, really fun.
Well, and I do want to ask you about any sort of classes for children. I know that you probably don't want to put a welding torch in the hands of maybe a 5-year-old, or maybe you would. I don't know. But I mean, do you have any sort of simplified classes for the kids?
That's a good question. Hammerspace does some good kids programming. Maker Studio down at Union Station does some good kids programming. The Johnson County Library Makerspace is open free. It's got really good kids programming. But we actually just did start a new partnership with Cornerstones of Care, which is a foster care provider of services. And they're actually bringing youth into the space to learn how to use the wood and metalworking equipment, doing design build projects, and as a benefit of that, they get that knowledge, but they also get a learning stipend. So it's a new kind of pilot program that we're working on. It's really exciting, and it is involving youth.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I think sometimes, we are so, we're such, it seems foreign to be able to see something being actually made, you know, in generations. You know, fortunately, I had wood shop and all that in high school, but I think there's sort of a sense of getting away from that, maybe due to, you know, the budgets and schools and that sort of thing. So it's great to bring in the youth and say, you know, you can do this.
Yeah, and if you've never used a measuring tape, like what do those tick marks mean? Are they an eighth of an inch, a 16th of an inch? And basic skills like that we just don't teach in high school anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, really getting that time to figure it out and learn about materials, learn about safety, learn about that cadence, that speed of a work environment where you need to work safely and kind of, you know, fairly quickly, you know, so it's kind of cool to teach the kids that.
Where did you get your background? Where did you get your training?
I did did it all the wrong ways by learning by myself.
And I noticed you only have 4 fingers in hand.
I've got all 10 right now, knock on wood.
I'm just kidding.
I learned from other people who are better builders than myself.
Yeah,
Matt
yeah.
Castilleja is a woodworker who I look up to locally. Learned a lot from him and a lot of other people in the city.
And so what have you made? Just kind of give us a sort of a snapshot of things that you've created.
Oh, you know, my whole thing is building a space for other people to be able to build stuff.
Okay.
But, you know, working on this fall, these new classes, I've been working on the three-legged stool, the side table. I'm working on a bed frame for my house, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm always learning, and the best way to learn is to teach, you know, and that's so true.
You know,
I'm learning so much.
Now, do you do any of your preliminary work and like in a graphic program?
Oh, that's a good question. Sometimes I'll dive into something graphics heavy like Fusion 360 if I really need to. But usually it's just pen and paper.
Okay.
Maybe an isometric, you know, drawing on like graph paper. But usually I just do some rough measurements and rock and roll.
So it's really exciting that someone can come into the Maker's Village and say, you know, I have this idea and it's made out of wood, but I don't know how to do it. Is that a challenge for you, or is it something like, yes, I can show you how it, you know, this is how it's done?
It totally depends on, yeah, I mean, you're always managing expectations, just like anything, you know.
Sure.
So trying to deliver not just a good experience for that person, but also help them make something that's going to last a long time and not spend a lot on materials. So that balance is really difficult depending on the project.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, you know, most people are super reasonable and excited just to learn. So they may come in with this big ambitious idea and then after they've kind of honed it and focused it, they're like, okay, this is actually really cool and I learned how to do this one thing really well.
Mm-hmm. So then you have the machines. You have. Do you have any print making?
We don't. Okay. Our neighbors, though, at Two Tone Press, right. they had the Print right. League, which is a community print shop. So mm-hmm. they got that covered.
And this whole neighborhood has really become just a wonderful one-stop shop for, you know, making things or printing. And then I think urban mining
yeah.
is
yeah.
relocated over there. And, you know, it's really come up, this 31st and Cherry
yeah.
area. But you are located at 606 East 31st Street. Do you have a number or a website or anything that folks can...
Yeah, makervillagekc.org. And then, you know, pop by anytime you're in the neighborhood on a Saturday. You don't have to have an appointment or anything. Mm-hmm. You can just pop in to say hello and check out the space.
Are there any times that are busier than most, like weekends or...
Since we're just open to the public on Saturdays, you know, our classes and memberships go on outside of that. Saturdays are usually the best time, but it can be kind of crazy in there.
Yeah.
So I apologize if you walk in and, you know, I'm busy helping somebody, but somebody should be able to show you around.
And I'm kidding. He really does have all his fingers.
I do.
Is there something going on with you personally as an artist, as a designer, as a creator, Nick, that we might... want to share with our listeners?
I've been exploring recycled plastic and learning a lot from other people. Precious Plastics is a group yeah. that in the Netherlands that's doing some really cool stuff where they're making machines to recycle plastic in a lot of really cool ways. And the machines are made so that they could be made at Hammer Space or Maker Village. You know, they're meant to be really simple and made pretty easily because we have a trash problem. We have a recycling problem. So, you know, that's really
it's overwhelming.
Trying to get inspired to the level of you know, actually getting involved in the movement. But been messing around the hat badge I've got right here on. Mm-hmm. You can't mm-hmm. see it, but it says, I support libraries, and it's made out of recycled plastic. And that's something I did at the library, at the Johnson County Library Makerspace. So, you know, that's something that I'm having fun with right now.
I like that. Are there any parting words that you want to mention to our listeners before we go to another segment?
I'm just curious to hear Israel and hear what he has to say. He's an artist I look up to quite a bit, and just thankful for the time.
Yeah. Well, I know you're going to stick around if you can, because we're going to talk to Israel Alejandro Garcia and Bernadette Esperanza Torres, and also with Sandy Ventura, and then we can come back together and just have sort of, you know, I know some of you have just met today, so we'll kind of have a wrap up at the end.
Awesome.
All right, stick around. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this.
Thank you.
This is Art Speak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez Boy. That's a little Yo-Yo Ma and Bobby McFerrin for you as we transition to our next guest. And we have up next Israel Alejandro Garcia Garcia, who's an artist, photographer, designer, gallery owner. And he's joining us for a discussion with Bernadette Esperanza Torres. Oops. And, yeah. Did you? Hello.
Hello.
We're going to talk about the Garcia Squared Contemporary Gallery at 115 West 18th Street here in Kansas City, Missouri. So welcome, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. You know, it's been a few months since you were last here on Art Speak Radio, and we want to talk about the exhibition that you received, I believe, an inspiration grant for, right?
I did. A couple of things have happened, I think, since we last spoke.
Uh-huh.
Through, at least with the Bordes Carnosos exhibit, which is the Border Carnage. You know, when we first spoke, I think I had just received the inspiration grant, the rocket grant through Charlotte Street Arts KC, and today it was announced that I had received the interchange grant.
Congratulations to you.
Yeah,
for that.
The Mid-America Arts Alliance.
Great.
So, it's a great morning to wake up to that news.
Yeah, no kidding. So tell us what you'll do with this, because this is really hot off the press, right?
It is, yeah. So, you know, basically, just to kind of talk back about what Bordes Carnosos is, it's really just really, I describe it as a living sculpture. I think it's a little bit different than an installation or just a sculpture. I think it does more than that. I think it's an educational component that really talks about the immigrant experience from an artist's perspective, from my point of view. And it's also meant to talk about kind of the parallel issues that bind us, I think, here in Kansas City or in the Midwest. There's a lot of misinformation or lack of information that doesn't get to us in a timely manner, or that is just completely wrong. And I think it's really this experience that's really going to talk and bring you back down to the empathy of what we should be thinking about when we talk about this immigrant and the immigrant experience, and I think what's going on right now at the news.
And I think it helps to dispel some of the fear and what you think you know. I think it sort of questions that or challenges that, right?
Yeah, and I think it's really, like you said, I think it's posting those questions and really showing some ephemeral objects that really speak to the pain that these migrants are going through. And I think, you know, it's, even though it's happening at the U.S.-Mexico border, it is affecting us locally. And I think we could speak to that as just this past Sunday where we had these raids kind of going on. And I think Kansas City wasn't one of them, but I think we are very well aware that there is a detention center here in the Midwest, here in Kansas, and that there is an immigration court that we have to deal with here in Kansas City. So I think there are these issues that are happening in our own backyard that a lot of our Kansas City population isn't aware of.
You know, and it's easy to when you turn on the news or you read something that it's happening over there, but it's really, it's here.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of us, it's easy to turn it off, you know, to walk away or to flip to the next page or, you know, swipe our finger to the next thing. And I think this is what this living sculpture does. It gives you the ability to not be able to go away. I think it stays in the community, and it's really speaking directly to the community. And you can't just walk away. It's going to exist in Kansas City for about a year, moving from community to community. And I think it forces people to really consider the issues that are going on currently.
And I think if you could help describe what the living sculpture is to our listeners. I know this is radio, so the visuals are a little bit difficult, but what will they see with this living sculpture?
Yeah, well, basically they'll see multiple things. I think one of the biggest bodies of work are the ephemeral objects that I was able to collect during my research. Mm-hmm. I was able to take a trip to the U.S.-Mexico border. I began in Brownsville, so I was able to travel the whole 2,000 miles back in the fall of 2018, and I think it's really that trip that I began to gather these elements, really hiking through these migrant trails and really looking at their suffering and their experience and what they leave behind mm-hmm. along the way. Mm-hmm. Usually they leave behind because they've finished with the item. Let's talk about food, cans, mm-hmm. elements such as water bottles. A lot of times because they've passed away, whether mm-hmm. it was through nature and through the elements, or they were actually, there's a huge number of homicides mm-hmm. Along these routes that, you know, vigilantes or XYZ. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really talking about their experience and really humanizing these objects and really giving it the value that they are. It's life for these people.
Well, and I can tell listeners, personally speaking, when I saw these images, it took my breath away. I almost crumbled to my knees because, you know, the intense power of these objects to help people get to where they needed to be, or you know, we're so hopeful and yet so, you know, so sad, knowing that a lot of the people do not survive this long journey, and the resourcefulness, you know,
right.
of the objects that are left behind. It's just, it's, you know, it's a testament to the human spirit.
Right. You know? Yeah, and it's really telling the story through these objects, giving right. these migrants a voice mm-hmm. through these objects. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, like I said, that is one, and I think the most, the strongest body of work. There's going to be elements that connect it to Kansas City's brown and black communities, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. what our history is, mm-hmm. what our immigrant history is in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, and really speak to how it actually does affect us, because we have a long history since the since 1850, we have some influence of the brown and black community here, and the Latinx community here in Kansas City, Missouri, or in the Midwest. So I think it's really bringing that information back and saying, yes, it affects us, and this is why it does, and mm-hmm. this is why you should care.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this will begin to travel in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas neighborhoods this fall, right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. So I think if everything falls into place, September would be its mm-hmm. first site mm-hmm. Here in Kansas City, Missouri. I think we're still figuring out the details because there are a lot of details to be figured out. But yes, yeah, so this September will be its first site, and I think it's just, and through great community partners, I think I've been very lucky that a lot of the community partners that I have brought this to are excited and are really willing to kind of jump in with me and mm-hmm. really take a chance on really educating the community mm-hmm. and bringing this to a larger audience.
So when you begin to announce the dates and the locations, is there a website that is connected to?
Yeah, there will be. There's MOCA.org, which will be the website that will have the information, the dates, and the schedule once we're able to put that together. I think following me or my Facebook page, it's my full name, Israel Alejandro Garcia Garcia, or Garcia Squared Contemporary Facebook page as well. I think all of these social medias will kind of be cross-pollinated and really be able to put the information out once that kind of settles down and we actually have them nailed down.
Good. And, you know, if that isn't enough, I mean, you have a lot a lot of plates in the air, my friend. Garcia Square Contemporary is at 115 West 18th Street and currently is featuring our friend that's sitting to the left of you, Bernadette Esperanza Torres. Hello.
Hello.
Yay. It's always a pleasure to have you both in the studio. And Bernadette, you're showing your work at Garcia Square Contemporary now through
October 19th.
Good.
We'll be having a couple First Fridays coming up.
Okay. And the name of your exhibition?
It's Reflections of Hope. It's a first time in Kansas City, a solo exhibit of all my work. My work is autobiographical, figurative, and floral. Flowers, mm-hmm. Ceramics.
Yeah. And if you could share with us the website or any sort of the information about this exhibition, because as we're talking, if our listeners are so inclined, you know, to find you on the web or mm-hmm. Facebook or something, so they can share.
Yes. I'm at Garcia.
Yeah. And then I would say both through both of our Facebook mm-hmm. pages would be a great way. I think our Garcia Squared Facebook page is actually one of the most active for both of us. That
yes.
will have all the information. Also the new dates for the workshops that we're offering.
Yes, I'm having two pop-up flower making workshops. I make ceramic floral flowers, and people always ask, oh, how do you make them? Are they ceramic? And so since I've been asked a lot, I'm having a pop-up flower making workshop along with an artist talk tomorrow, 11 to 12:30, and also Saturday the 20th, 12 to 1:30.
I love that. Yeah. You know, and you know, you're both here together because not only did Israel want to speak about the living sculpture, but also because you are hosting Reflections of Hope at mm-hmm. Garcia Square Contemporary. And then, you know, you mentioned, Israel, about partnering with people in the community. And one of the partnerships is with Bernadette, who is there's a two-phase funding going
yes.
towards your
There is, yeah. Bernadette
exhibition.
Is amazing. I think it's, like I said, I think there's these partnerships, these great people that we meet in our community. I think that's why Kansas City's arts community is so amazing. And I think I ditto what Nick mentioned, because I think we go back and forth. We support each other,
sure,
and he's
sure.
just as amazing to me as well. And I think amazing amount of knowledge that he's been gone through. But I think with Bernadette, it's been the same way with her. I think it was great to be able to give her first solo show here in Kansas City and understand and know that she knew where I was coming from mm-hmm. as a gallery director mm-hmm. and as a curator, because she is one as well.
I teach at the Metropolitan Community College, Penn Valley, teach ceramics and drawing. I'm also the gallery director for the Carter Art Center Gallery. And being a gallery director, I know that, you know, as artists come through, and Israel is having a show coming up this October along with Sunny Ruffin.
Okay,
Sunny Joe Ruffin,
yeah.
And so it's going to be two shows. But I wanted to, you know, give back, and so I am donating a sculpture that is in the gallery right now for a donation of $20.
Yes, well, so anybody listening to that.
And you know, I appreciate that we just can't give out ticket prices, but however, you know, it does go to benefit.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, and I think, like I said, the generosity mm-hmm. of the donation is of a work is great.
Yeah.
Just because we are benefiting each other, and we see that struggle, you know, mm-hmm. in both of our systems. And I think mm-hmm. When an artist is generous enough to donate a piece mm-hmm. to your initiative, mm-hmm. you definitely want to make sure that that is reciprocated some way.
Yeah, and you have the like minds in terms of wanting to educate communities by giving them, giving viewers a glimpse of the other.
Correct.
Exposing diverse mm-hmm. populations and art deserts to Latinx narratives, right?
Right, yeah, and I think that's the great thing is that I think as arts community in general, we are always looking to be informative of what we do be educators. You know, as Nick mentioned, I think we're inherently as artists educators. You know, we are looking to kind of pass along and open, you know, bring different ideas into somebody's mind and be able to consider our community as a whole, and I think really try to be as informative as we can to be able to produce our work, be able to invite other artists into our spaces, and vice versa.
Beautiful. You know, if you just went to, if you would share both of your websites, we're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll come back with Sandy Van Tool, and then we'll all come together and just have a one big art fest discussion. Yeah. But if you want to share your personal websites or social media.
Yeah. My website is BernadetteTorres.com, and my Instagram is Bernadette_Esperanza_Torres.
Yeah, and for myself, Facebook, I think it's, like I said, under my name, Israel Alejandro Garcia Garcia, or same thing, Facebook, Garcia Squared on Facebook, which is a galleries page. And I think that would be a good, at least few sites that would be very informative.
Yeah. Terrific.
Thank you so much for the invite.
Yeah, stick around. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after these messages.
Support for KKFI provided by the 15th Annual Kansas City Fringe Festival, July 14th through the 28th. This 15-day showcase features work from over 100 local, regional, and national performing and visual artists throughout a 5-mile footprint of the Kansas City Cultural Corridor. There is something for everyone. Tickets and full details are available at kcfringe.org.
Hundreds of Lights for Liberty rallies took place throughout the country on Friday. KKFI was on hand to document the local event.
My family and myself immigrated at the U.S. Texas border. So we began, it started in Texas, but ultimately our point of entry was Tijuana at the age of 7.
You can hear what all the speakers had to say on the forum tonight at 6.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two, two takes at a movie currently playing in the Kansas City area. And today the topic is a British musical fantasy, and it's called Yesterday.
What an interesting premise. This British actor, played by Himesh Patel, is a musician and not a very good one. He has an accident, and all of a sudden he wakes up being able to know all the Beatles songs, but no one else in the world knows them.
That's right, and he records these songs and he becomes an overnight musical sensation. And this is a kind of fantasy that will really appeal mainly to Beatles fans. If you've forgotten how great these tunes are from the 60s and 70s, then this movie is for you.
Well, there's a point where two people make the comment, a world without the Beatles music is a world that's infinitely worse. And I agree.
Yeah, and these songs are well performed, I thought. You know,
yes.
A lot of people are purists. They want to hear the Beatles only do the Beatles. But I thought Himesh Patel did a very good job with these songs. And you can see why he could potentially have become popular. This movie is really about dreams. Do we really believe in the dreams that we think we do? And when they come true, are they really what we want them to be?
Right. I felt that this film was a bit too long, and there was a confusing little tangent. But all in all, I think it's a success.
Yeah. It was very entertaining, and Lily James makes for a very appealing female lead. And you were mentioning earlier Kate McKinnon.
Oh, my goodness. She was so funny, and she played Patel's manager, and I thought every time she was on the screen, it made the film even better.
And I guess the bottom line is, I believe in Yesterday. I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two.
Announcing a book signing and live enactment of author T.T. McGill's debut book, Sparrow, The Water's Edge, Saturday, July 20th at the Improv Comedy Club at Zona Rosa. Live on stage, the characters from the pages will navigate the complexities surrounding their friendships. Doors open at noon, live enactment from 1 to 3 p.m. Learn more at eventbrite.com, search Sparrow, The Water's Edge. Support for KKFI provided by Luke Management, LLC.
This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And up next, we have Sandy Van Tool. Her 1,000 Footsteps Tell the Story, video documentation of refugees telling their journey stories, is an Arts KC Inspiration Grant recipient. So we say congratulations to you for that.
Well, thank you.
Because that's a beautiful story, and tell us more about it, because it's just a very important story to understand.
Well, actually, the story starts with Bernadette. In 2018, the Carter Arts Center sponsored the very first exhibit, 1,000 Footsteps Tell the Story. And at that point, we thought, oh, a one-time exhibit. And we had presenters. We had quilts made by refugee families kind of documenting their journey story. We also had photographs by Julie Deneche and Art to show these refugees, local families, that came from all over the world and now call Kansas City home. Well, it was so popular, and it went so well. We had social agencies that came in and gave presentations. People were really wanted to plug in afterwards, that we were then invited after this 2018 show to go to the Story Center up as part of the Metropolitan Library System. And now the project is taking off, and we're going to do a traveling show that goes up into Nebraska. But because we don't have refugee families going with us, we wanted to document them telling their own stories. We've done these presentations in the past, and they're always well received and heartfelt, but in many communities that's not possible. In Kearney, Nebraska, it's not mm-hmm. possible. So this is a real opportunity for us to do video documentation of those stories, so that other people can hear them firsthand.
And I think it's really important to know that the stories tend to begin about that person's country of origin, where they lived, what they did, the conflict that forced them to leave, you know, rather than just hear the end story, well, they left their country. You know, I think gives them a more well-rounded vision of that individual. And I do want to apologize. I called you Ventile as the last name. But I want to say congratulations again, because the Arts KC Inspiration Grant, you know, allowed you to help bring this, you know, to others outside of Kansas City, right?
Right. It's another tool in our toolkit for this project. Yeah. And it's really going to enhance the whole project, because we find sometimes we do a small show and it may be one quilt, so we can use these videos with photography to really bring home the whole story to people, like I said, who won't meet people firsthand. Mm-hmm. And in the videography, we plan to ask them about images they used in the quilt, why they're meaningful, why they had such meaning to them. And what we found over the overarching project is these folks are in the process of becoming. We all are.
Mm-hmm.
These are
mm-hmm.
journey stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it helps show the full breadth of their becoming, whatever they, American citizens, you know, students. And so we capture that moment in time and hear that story. And that's really important to the history of America.
You know, and talk, if you could talk about the importance of happening, of this taking place currently in the middle of a lot of divisive
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the way we come at this project is everybody has a journey story. And mm-hmm. I think anybody in America came from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a residency in Homestead National Monument at Beatrice, Nebraska. And one of their focuses is tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you come from Germany, Norway, wherever it was mm-hmm. after the Civil War? They're the same stories. You know, we were starved out, we were thrown out, mm-hmm. It's just different people mm-hmm. in different places now. And that empathetic understanding that we all have that connection makes a difference. When you hear the stories, one of the stories that was really impactful, a group New Roots for Refugees does, and they were talking about how do you get the the plants from these people's countries that they farm. And she says, well, sometimes they walk up and they have a little tissue, and then they open it up and there's seeds. And it's like, oh my gosh, my grandmother did that.
Wow.
And I think having that conversation and seeing the commonality in our lives makes it really hard to say my neighbor is another, because my neighbor is just doing what my grandmother did.
In light of things that are happening, again, with the divisiveness and all that, is there any sort of risk that's involved with taking this show on the road in sense of, you know, people that may not have the same viewpoint as what you're wanting to show?
It's really interesting to us. So far, we haven't had a lot of pushback. I think like-minded people come to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Or people, as Israel was saying, lack of information. People who want to be informed or are wondering if they're misinformed. And that's the audience we touch. And the other audience is people who are looking to reach out and do something in this environment. I think those voices are sometimes quieted by the louder voices in the world. And the thing we hear the most is, what can I do? And that's where the project really takes a turn. We use those videos, art, and then we take them and point them towards agencies or groups so that they can make an impact with these communities.
Sandy Van Tiel's 1,000 Footsteps Tell the Story. Where will this begin? When will this journey begin? I know it's happened in some, you know, in the past years. But when will you begin to send this exhibition off?
Well, we plan to do the video documentation in August. We're, for efficiency's sake, we're going to do it in like a day or a couple of days. We've got 4 or 5 potential people that are willing to step up and tell their stories, which is really exciting. After it is edited and ready to go, we plan to, we've already talked to several places here in Kansas City and do a pop-up with a quilt, photography, and the video. And then this fall, we will be going to Nebraska. We've reached out. There are several refugee resettlement groups in Nebraska and their partners. And we're going to work with them so that we can start traveling around the state. It's kind of cyclical, excuse me. But, you know, the show begets advocates, begets more work to be done on a local level and more relations with refugee families. And those refugee families then raise up and help other people. So we kind of work in that format. So this August is the start date.
Okay.
I would say this fall we'll probably do pop-ups here in Kansas City. Look on my website if anybody's interested.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, your website?
I will post as I know things. Right now we're in the working stages, so there's not a lot of forward information. And then this fall we'll be talking to people in Nebraska and start doing site locations.
Social media, anything that you might mention to folks to be aware of?
So right now, my Instagram, Sandy Van Tiel Paintings, and we plan to upload some social media this fall once we have a calendar and scheduled dates.
Yeah, I love the fact that all the artists and educators are here in studio, because there's a connection with each and every one of you here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can. Oops, let me turn that one off. Yeah, so we're going to bring Nick and Bernadette and Israel back to the mics, because I want to have a discussion about, you know, what we can do to really work together and support each other in our endeavors, you know, with what you talked about here.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think we all have to, we're beginning to lose our spaces, you know, we're beginning to... I think I just listened to a conversation about it, and I think that's evident, and it's cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Kansas City, you know, we tend to be priced out of things as creatives and as artists, and I think, you know, what was once an arts district is no longer an arts district, you know, because there's no artists there anymore.
Yeah.
So I think that, for me, I think as a working artist and as a gallerist, I think that's one of the biggest issues here in Kansas City.
You know, and it's interesting because, you know, it hasn't just come to light. It just hasn't been, okay, now all of a sudden we're in danger of losing our art spaces. I mean, that's kind of been the thrust of it. But when those communities are built up and then other, you know, businesses come in and then it does price out the artists and all that, can you think of any ways that would help remedy that? Can you think of anything that you know we need to begin thinking about or doing?
It's much easier said than done, but
yeah.
You know, if you're able to get a coalition of people or find non-traditional financing or a traditional bank loan and purchase mm-hmm. a space, you're, like I said, it's much easier said than done, mm-hmm. but then you are able to kind of own and not be priced out or pushed out as, you know, the real estate market changes. And this is a conversation that Julia Cole at Charlotte Street and, you know, the folks that are getting kicked out of the drugstore, it's hard. So I think, you know, reaching out to organizations like AltCap and looking at vehicles to finance as a coalition and figure out a way to get ownership that way. And I don't know the answer, but that is, you know, something to think about.
Well, and I wonder, you know, the push is here, right here in Kansas City. You know, just if you go just across the bridge there in Kansas City, Kansas, there is some affordable, you know, spaces still available. Do you think that maybe the push will go to a different section of the city or leave the state altogether? You know, I think about what's happening in the East Crossroads. You know, it's kind of expanding in that direction.
And I think, you know, for the conversation that we all think about is displacement. You know, I think we don't want to displace a community that has been established there beyond our time frame. You know, and I think that's really the biggest thing that we need to think about. And I think the city, at the city level, they need to really appreciate the artists that they say they're supporting. You know, I don't mm-hmm. think I see that as much as they say they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it all starts at the city level. You know, mm-hmm. I think if they are giving building owners tax breaks, why aren't we as artists being given those same tax breaks? If, you know, we are defined as a art city, then you have to support your artists. And I don't think that's the case.
And I know Bernadette has been in the city as long as I have because we went to the Art Institute together. So, you know, can you think about what our art spaces were once we graduated out of art school? Because I, frankly, I don't remember having this as a problem because the availability was
yeah,
you know,
when we
so
got
rich.
Out, not saying our age, but when we got out, you could rent a house for $300, and we would have three artists, you know, graduated mm-hmm. in a home, and we would take the full basement or the first floor and make it a artist studio.
Mm-hmm.
So there was lots of places that were bleak in a sense, and mm-hmm. that stretch. You know, graduated with us and, you know, he really made that east side more like an arts community. And also the main person that really started that was Jim Leedy.
Absolutely.
So Jim Leedy started with that brush company and the Opie, and that's where First Fridays came from.
And, you know, and it still operates. There's still a lot of, you know, artists in that space that mm-hmm. are creating and thriving and all that. I think that maybe the spaces have gone away just outside of, you know, that area.
I do know the ceramic community. We've had the Clay Guild that still mm-hmm. really brings in artists and also the Crane Yard, and Belger, and so the ceramic community, we need kilns and more than just an open space. We need, you know, water, pretty much water and electricity and kilns. So I know that the ceramic community, we kind of survive, but because we have to have not just a table or a wall.
Well, I know I've had this conversation with a number of artists, some that actually were with the drugstore and all that. And I know next month I have another discussion with some people in the city that are going to come in and help address some of these issues and, and, you know, what do we do? And I know everyone is trying to find a solution, find an answer, but what do you do till then, you know?
Right, and I think that's the, you know, for us as a daily basis, this is our livelihood. This is what we're living off of. So we can't, we don't have the luxury of waiting months for a solution. You know, we have to do it and do it right away. And I think for those of us that do have our spaces, and like myself and Nick, that are in some sense secure, you know, and I think that's the biggest question I think every artist thus asks itself, you know, whether we definitely don't want to be the gentrifiers or the displacers of communities, you know, and I think there's a neighboring city, as you mentioned, right next, and one bridge away, and I think, you know, that is something that we have to look into.
You know, this is something that, I mean, it's a huge discussion, and it's really an important discussion to have. I think it was, last Saturday when Charlotte Street had a big conversation with the area artists and people and all that, and was facilitated by a young KC professor. But I wondered at that time, you know, is there any way that we can partner with corporations, some of the bigger ones like Garmin, or Cerner and all that? I mean, is there any way that we might be able to get an artist in residency with them and perhaps work on a different community, you know, building community, an artist community within maybe the funding of some of those corporations? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and there's some communities that do mixed use, and artists are part of that conversation. It's not just segregation again.
Right.
They invite an artist in. There's reduced income housing, et cetera, as there are for other populations. And I think that's good to have a good mix instead of all this segregation. But you have to have everybody at the table to do that.
Keeping the community, the artist community, together. I teach at the Metropolitan Community College. And introducing people who are starving for art and opening their eyes of ceramics or drawing or printmaking. And then beyond the school system, they really want to build their art up. And having a place like the Makerspace is just amazing to meet him. For my sculpture students to like, okay, here's another place that you can go once you get the bug of I got to make art.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I thank you all so very much for your important points of view, what you're doing in the community, what you're doing with your art, and, you know, lifting people up in Kansas City and beyond. You know, thank you so much. I will actually have you all back again soon.
Thank you.
You know, we'll look at our calendars. But, you know, thank you so much to Bernadette Esperanza Torres, Israel Alejandro Garcia, Sandy Van Tile, and Nick Ward-Bob. Always a pleasure to have you all here with me on ArtSpeak Radio.
Thank you.
You know, next week, the 24th, KKFI will be hosting the Homeless Marathon, so I won't be on air. Don't look for me. I won't be here. I'll be at home. But I'll be back July 31st, and that's going to be with Sean Stewart and Krishan McKinney. We're going to talk about 30 Americans currently at the Nelson Atkins Museum. Stay tuned next for my beautiful friend, my beautiful, talented friend, Jeff Harshbarger, Jazz Afternoon. Stay tuned for him next, and then followed by Old G's Hangout at 3. Thank you so, so very much for listening, and like us on Facebook, because we like you. And anyway, I'm going to say this, honey, I'm coming home.